Are you a Hawkeye fan living in Story County? Do you feel isolated, like you're alone in a maze of red? Well, you're not the only one. And that's why we here at StoryCounty.news have launched a brand new section of our website, From the Hawkeye of the Storm, which will feature our weekly podcast, Brada's Branded Thoughts, as well as other Hawkeye-related content for all you Story County residents who bleed black and gold, or if you live in Western Iowa, Eastern Iowa, or somewhere else other than Ames and you're a Hawkeye fan, we'd love your support. All of our content is free, so again, give our Facebook page a follow, give it a like, and give our Twitter page a follow as well, @FromTheHawkeye, @FromTheHawkeye on Twitter. The more likes, the more follows, the more support we get, the more content we can continue to push out, and it's all free. It's From the Hawkeye of the Storm, hosted by StoryCounty.news, for the best Hawkeye content in the area. Week 154 of Brada's Branded Thoughts and From the Hawkeye of the Storm here in Central Iowa. And we have a very special guest talking Iowa versus Grand Canyon this weekend. We welcome Paul Coro to the show this evening. Paul is a senior writer and editor for GCULopes.com, as well as the color guy for GCU Athletics Radio. So, Paul, first of all, appreciate you coming on the show. I know it's probably it's a very busy time for you and the entire athletic department, so we appreciate you jumping on with us.
No problem. My pleasure. It's a fun time for the historical making time for the program. So everybody's all in to see how long this can last, especially against a team like Iowa.
Let's talk a little bit about GC before we get to the matchup on Saturday. I want to get to that and kind of break down the rosters and whatnot. But when we talk about GCU, this has been quite a journey. And again, I'm speaking from somebody on the outside. You can speak from somebody on the inside. Talk maybe a little bit about the journey here for the Grand Canyon Antelopes. I mean, with what Bryce Drew has brought to the table and of course, the journey years ago from Division II to Division I, maybe talk a little bit about that journey to start with.
Yeah, I mean, big picture for people who aren't familiar with Grand Canyon University, it's right in the heart of Phoenix, but it was a very small school for a long time. It was founded in 1949, but it really went through a boom in the past decade or so. And part of that boom was moving to Division I athletics 8 years ago. And they had to go through that 4-year transition period initially where they were ineligible for NCAA postseason play. So really, because of the pandemic, this was only their third chance to get into the big dance. So pretty remarkable feat for a basketball program to get to the WAC tournament championship game their first two times and then break through on the third visit against a New Mexico State team that had just had a stranglehold on the WAC. They had been to the tournament 8 of the previous 9 tries. And especially when you also consider it's the first year of a coaching staff. Bryce Drew comes in, all new coaching staff, a little bit of a roster turn, and to put in a new system during a pandemic with very limited situations and a limited number of games to get your system in is all pretty remarkable.
Be able to bring down, like you said, that a bit of a dynasty from the Aggies for so many years. So of course with this roster comes some uniqueness. I personally, and of course following Big Ten basketball, we're used to really quality big men from Trace Jackson Davis to Luka Garza and whatnot. But I can't remember, and I looked through the Big Ten rosters here before we jumped on, there is not a Big Ten school that presents the challenges from a size standpoint that a starting lineup does with GCU. And again, correct me if I'm wrong on pronouncing these names. You've got Asbjorn Midgard and Alessandro Laver. Hopefully I pronounced those two
nice
names
work
right.
On both.
Two guys, 6'10 or above. So first of all, how was Bryce able to kind of acclimate that to a starting lineup? Because that's not a lineup you see every day.
Yeah. And I'm not really sure, you know, like this is my first year being around. I'm not sure if this is very typical for him at all. Looking at his past teams at Valparaiso and Vandy had very different type of big men. A lot of athletic shooting type big men. But what he inherited here was he already had that kind of spread power forward in Alessandro Laver. He's from Bolzano, Italy, and has been in the program for 4 years now and is he's the third leading scorer all time, second in Division I play, and has just been super steady, consistent, but having his best 3-point shooting season. But then Bryce Drew in that year between Vanderbilt and GCU was doing some ESPN work on games, and he kept seeing this guy at Wichita State in warmups and wondering, like, boy, that guy sure looks like he has a lot of skill and talent and doesn't get on the floor a lot. So when Asbjorn Midgard went into the transfer portal, and there was some familiarity in the past with him, his brother-in-law, that's his assistant coach, Casey Shaw, had seen him back in the day too and was interested. They went after him. He committed to GCU sight unseen, just believed in the coaching staff and what they were telling him they would do. And, you know, with transfers, you often wonder, like, okay, what's the hole in their game? What's, there's right. got to be something, a character flaw, a game flaw. And it just isn't there. He's sorry for the,
you're good.
it's just not there in his game because he has great hands. He's for his tremendous size, he's very mobile. Yeah. He's got a touch. He's improved his free throw shooting enormously. And he's the leader in the nation in field goal percentage because he's more than just a dunker. He's got a jump hook. He can hit mid-range shots. And he became that rim enforcer that they didn't have previously.
What kind of problems do you foresee him? And again, I know that just from Bryce Drew speaking this week on Luka Garza, everybody's familiar with Luka Garza. But what kinds of problems do you foresee Asbjorn being able to present for Luka?
Oh yeah. I think we spent a lot of time.
I think that's maybe a reverse question from what most people would ask. Yeah. So
my head was already going to the other one because that's certainly what your mind is predicated on. I think the sheer power of Asbjorn Midgard is probably different than a lot of guys, maybe not Kofi Coburn. He's coming right off of that Coburn game. And, you know, that's not very much different in size. You know, Ash is 7 foot 270. I think Coburn tips in at 285 allegedly on the roster. But the thing about Midgard is he's so solid. He's just, you know, he grew up in Denmark and he was kind of feeling out different sports like handball and soccer. And his dad got him into powerlifting. So like all these things kind of made a basketball player, even though he didn't find it until he was in his teens. And he's just solid. He's like a sycamore tree. He's just his legs, his trunk, his torso, his arms. They're just everything on him. And if you Jovan Blackshear Jr., the point guard, he's a really crafty, you know, 5'11 point guard. He likes to sneak up on people and strip the ball. And he said one of the first practices he went up and he went for that. He slapped it and nothing moved. I mean, he was like, this is very different.
And so let's look at it from the other perspective then. Asbjorn, from what I looked at, and Laver, again, if I'm not mixing these two up, Laver is a guy who can spread you out a little bit more, stretch the floor. So how is Midgard going to be able to make up for the fact that Luka is a guy who can stretch the floor? Is he comfortable? Do you think that's an area where GCU could run into some problems with Luka able to shoot that three at the effectiveness that he is able to?
That'll be certainly be a test because that's something he hasn't seen a lot. You know, kind of the X factor they have here off the bench too is Gay McLaughlin. He's been their sixth man energizer. He's not nearly as tall, but he's pretty strong and he's athletic. So he's often the one that comes in and will take a big who's a little bit more athletic or versatile or a shooter because he can switch onto guards very well and stay, but he's got a lot of power around the rim. He's just got an incredible knack for rebounding. But Midgard, I think, got a little bit of taste of this in the WAC tournament championship game, much smaller player, but he was guarding Donnie Tillman for a little bit, who is a former Utah UNLV player. And he was pulling him out early in the game and taking some threes and putting it on the floor. And Midgard was really kind of managing that area in between where he was, you know, sort of challenging the shot, but still leaving himself enough room to slide with him to the hoop. And ultimately it made Tillman stop trying to put it on the floor and take him.
Very interesting. So when we're talking, again, going back to what we see in the Big Ten, there have been various ways that teams try to stop Luka Garza. We've seen Juwan Howard of Michigan last year really committed to allowing 7'1" John Teske try to guard Luka by himself. What does Luka do? He puts up 40 points on him. Now Michigan wins because Michigan was able to basically lock down Iowa's 3-point shooters, CJ Frederick, Jordan Bohannon, Joe Wieskamp. So what do you see from Bryce Drew, knowing how he tries to defend bigger centers, I know that he hasn't seen someone like Luka, but do they throw double, triple team like we've seen out of like Fred Hoiberg in Nebraska, or do we see more of the Juwan Howard route? What's your prediction on that?
Yeah, I don't. They haven't really given sent a lot of help toward Mick Gard all season. He's, you know, he was all defensive team in the WAC too. So I would think because of his strength and also his knowledge, he's a 4-year player, and he's only been at GCU in a major role 1 year, but he was at Wichita State in a winning program. And, yeah, you know, even though he had a minor role, he's an incredibly intelligent player, and he talks to the coaches a lot about what he sees. And that's what he's really loved about Bryce Drew and his staff, that they've just been so open to his ideas and communication. So, you know, the Lopes are number 2 in the nation for opponent field goal percentage. So that goes beyond Mick Gard. They've been really principled in their overall defense. That 3-point shooting that you mentioned of Iowa surely is going to be as much of a concern. You know, I don't think Garza can beat you solely. And so they're going to probably worry about all those other guys, and transition defense will be huge, yeah, to find those guys, because, you know, GCU isn't a team that plays at a high pace. And so if the Hawkeyes are kicking it into gear and find, you know, run up to the corners and the wings, and the Lopes aren't there with them to challenge those open quick shots with basically like a 4-guard system, right? Then that could be a long day.
And Iowa is down their second biggest guy on this roster in Jack Nungy. Tore his meniscus here less than a month ago. So they really don't have anybody to match up with Alessandro Laver. Keegan Murray, I would guess, would draw that matchup. So how can Laver be effective maybe against a smaller defender in this game?
Laver's a really good inside-out player. He's got an incredible touch from outside. He hits about 41% on threes, but he also is a post finisher. He's not the same type of strength, but he's kind of more he's got his moves. He's got the jump hook. He can fade away. And then also what having two bigs like this do, two bigs who are skilled too, not just bigs, but both of them are very skilled players. They can play that high-low game with each other, where one of them will get into the post area and pass right over the defense to get it inside. And, you know, that's been one of the things this whole season that's been, you know, sort of a key to GCU success, whether they can get the ball to the post, because they do have that size and they do always have a mismatch at one or the other. But can they get it there when teams are doubling down, or especially when GCU isn't making shots, when, you know, GCU's 3-point shooting has been on and off on certain nights. And when it's off, teams just will, you know, lay back and collapse on, and then they try to still get into the post, and it can become a turnover situation when you're trying to force it.
You mentioned Javon Blackshear. You know, a lot of the attention when you look at this roster is of the big men inside, but here's a kid who's 5'11", brings quickness and obviously the ability to score. So certainly that, if you're an Iowa fan, there have been some problems over the career of Jordan Bohannon at guarding quick athletic guards. How can that play into the hands of the Antelopes on Saturday?
Yeah, unfortunately, you might be catching Blackshear at the wrong time, because all of a sudden he's figured out his perimeter shot. And that's been one of the components of his game that, you know, people always talked about for 2 years. Man, if he could get that 3-point shot, you know, he shot below 30% as a freshman. He was already shooting it over that this year, but he just all of a sudden turned torrid in the WAC tournament. He was phenomenal in the WAC tournament championship game. He's got this even keel demeanor, but he's kind of a big lights guy, because he grew up in a program in Phoenix, Shadow Mountain High School, that was coached by Mike Bibby. And they were playing a lot of national level games. They played on ESPN. You know, his teammate was Eddie House's son, Jalen, that's at Arizona State. This idea of being on national television or in a big game, that's nothing new to him. He's very level headed. And like you said, he's super quick, but also smart. You know, he's a playmaker. He's a classic point guard who is really good at setting the other guys up. He'll drive and suck a defense in and kick it back out for somebody like Laver. He'll bring the ball up court and, you know, feel somebody on his back and sort of, you know, do the pull up a la Steve Nash kind of thing to get a foul. He's just got all those little niches to his game, and he's a really annoying defender. You know, like he gets steals at moments that nobody really is looking for somebody to get a steal.
I look forward to seeing the matchup of Joe Toussaint versus Blackshear. Joe Toussaint, more of the quick type. He's maybe 6 foot, but certainly a guy who is a feisty defender. So I think that's going to be an interesting matchup. But as you mentioned, that 3-point shot will be a storyline at every position for Iowa, because there's not a guy that Iowa puts out that can't shoot the three. So that will be a storyline. You mentioned the defense, and I think these numbers are skewed. KenPom.com rates GCU as the number 74 in the country in adjusted defensive efficiency. But the number you just gave us indicates that this number might be a little off given the conference. So maybe talk a little bit about the defense and how has Bryce Drew generated such a lethal defense?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, computerized numbers probably are factoring in numbers, you know, and this year where you were struggling to find games, they played some non-Division I opponents in there, which obviously helped those numbers when they just stifled them. But it was also a mentality that they embraced. And, you know, with team defenses, so often it's that early success that kind of creates the brand and the personality and the belief in your defense. And then it just sort of takes from there, and they established that early on. And that's something that Bryce Drew, even though, you know, he's known as a former NBA guard and a great shooter, and you think of him a lot of an offensive mind, but he's always had strong defensive teams. Some of his teams have always ranked highly in defensive ranking, but you know, he'll tell you himself that great offense beats good defense, you know, every day in an NCAA tournament game. And this is obviously one of the greatest offense. Bryce Drew, I think, does call them the best offense in the nation. So that's going to be interesting. But what makes them so good is they just, you know, they bought into this idea of playing their roles. Nobody's outside themselves. They help each other. They stay in their niches. They're very aggressive on teams that are 3-point shooters about getting over screens. And they sort of held their feet to that in the fire, you know, during practices about, you know, mistakes like that. And it's really come into fruition during this last run of three games when they played their best basketball.
I want to finish with this game before we log off. But Paul, I want to talk a little bit more about Grand Canyon and this journey through this pandemic, because obviously COVID has affected everybody, not only in this country, but in the world. And certainly every athletic department in the country has been affected by it. So maybe talk a little bit about what this team has dealt with COVID. And just the perseverance that it's taken to get through a season, and like you mentioned, win a championship and finish it off with a win over New Mexico State in the title game. What has that taken throughout this pandemic to get there?
Well, I'll rewind it a full year back, because Bryce Drew was hired on March 17th a year ago, but hired at a time where he couldn't come to campus. He couldn't get on a plane. He couldn't be active in recruiting other than phone calls. And so immediately he's in a new job where he's hamstrung, and then he can't even meet his own team, his new players in person, or see what his basketball facility looks like, or get in his office. And so finally, when they do get on court in July, then they have limited workouts, you know, because you can't have a whole team. You're in small groups. And it was just a weird way to have to get to know all those new steps when you would normally probably be having team dinners and bonding, finding ways to bond off the court and stuff like that. And then finally, when they did get to the season, it was so delayed. Now they're having games canceled when they really need games to get into their new year. And then twice they had shutdowns that were long. They had a 17-day shutdown and a 20-day shutdown for various reasons. And so each time they were finding their stride as a team, and then had to try to regather that. And both times when they came out of it, they weren't the same. And it took a while again. And I think this last three games, you're seeing them find that rhythm again. And we'll see what this does, because it's sort of been like a little mini shutdown again, you know, with the whole between Saturday and Saturday, there's been a lot of travel, quarantining and that sort, and limited practice time again.
Absolutely. Iowa's been in Indianapolis since the beginning of the Big Ten tournament. And they, of course, have had to, basically be sanctioned to their, are sectioned off into their hotel room. So when you look at Bryce Drew, just looking up on the history of Grand Canyon basketball, Dan Marley, Bryce Drew, Paul Coro, you get all these guys who are big names. You've been all over the world covering sports, just reading your bio. What's great about GCU? How does Grand Canyon, obviously Dan Marley, you know, his history with the Suns, you're right there in Phoenix, but what is special about Grand Canyon? Why do people navigate there?
It's an incredible atmosphere on campus, and it's part of what drew me there. You know, they've had this rapid growth. So the enrollment ground is about 23,000, but about 13,000 of those students live on campus. So it's got this own community about it, and they've created a passion about basketball. Just Google Havocs, Google biggest party in college basketball. The home atmosphere for games is truly like no other. You know, Rick Pitino and all the sort have come in and said the same thing. It's not hyperbole. It's when you come to a game, the students are the show until the game starts. Cause they give them 3,000 seats in a 7,000 seat arena. Every game is sold out, and it's just a wild choreographed party every game. And it doesn't matter if they're who they're playing. If it's, this year playing Bethesda or when, you know, Illinois came in last year, it's the same sort of level of volume and fervor. So beyond that, and what attracted Bryce Drew too is the Christian school, and Bryce Drew really wanted that faith component to it, to have within his team and outward and the way they serve the community in Phoenix.
The last thing I wanted to get to before we swing back to the game to finish things up is, Grand Canyon played Illinois last year. So what was that matchup like?
You know, it was a great atmosphere and actually competitive in a way. Like you certainly wouldn't look at the final and probably think it was competitive. But, you know, one of the things I said immediately early in this season, once we figured out what he really was, I was like, what if Mittgard was here last year when they played Illinois? Because the biggest problem with the Illinois game was guys were just getting fouls left and right because nobody could cover Coburn. Right. He was just too huge and mammoth, and the rest of it was being managed pretty well. But, GCU has Jamal Walker on its staff too, and he's been an assistant coach at Illinois these past few years until joining Bryce Drew this year. So he has that familiarity with Iowa and that scout, and not that anybody knows how to stop Garza, but he at least has done the work on it.
Yeah. Last game of the season for Iowa was a loss last year at Illinois. So as far as Bryce Drew and this matchup, you're going to be playing in a smaller arena. So it's going to be familiar from, that standpoint. Again, you talked about pace of play. That's a factor. What's the one factor that if you had to nail one thing down for a key for Grand Canyon to pull off an absolute shocker, which isn't going to make our listeners very happy, but what's the key for that to happen this Saturday evening?
Well, I mean, this is a very abstract concept, but they've got to carry the same aura and confidence that they played the last three games of the season with. And that's a lot harder to do with this whole week of buildup and hype and the odd circumstances of getting police escorts in Indianapolis and seeing their name on a bracket up on the building across the street. And there's a lot of exterior things going on and, you know, knowing they're going to be on national television. So how do they keep that same feel that they've had? Because it was definitely a tone switch in the team late in the season after they took a loss. And all of a sudden they were serious, but loose. And can they keep that when they're playing a top 10 team in the nation with the best offense? You know, other than that, I would keep it really simply and say they got to hit shots. They're a different team when they hit perimeter shots because it opens up setting up their post players, and it also opens up the driving lanes for Blackshear to set up guys.
And being very forthright and honest, Iowa's defense has been a lot better over the past month. But as you and I both know, that has been the weakness of this team since Fran McCaffrey came to Iowa. So, being able to hit shots, especially when Iowa goes to the zone, because they're going to switch up zone man-to-man. I agree with you. That's going to be huge for GCU. And, you know, it's interesting. I mentioned the size. You're not going to see a team, even in the Big Ten, that starts basically two true centers. And you pair that with a quick point guard who can shoot threes in Blackshear. I said it on Saturday night. We watched part of the Grand Canyon win. And I said to a friend of mine, they better not draw a GCU. I said it because I remember watching that part of that Illinois game the previous year. And I just said that I don't want that matchup. And he laughed at me. He's like, no, he's like, it's Grand Canyon. We don't even know what Grand, you know, and you got these people in Iowa that have been posting pictures of social media and they post a picture of the Grand Canyon and they say, this is who we're playing. I think we got it. And that scares me half to death. So,
My friends is an Iowa grad and she was messaging me like, should I be worried? And I was like, when has Bryce Drew ever pulled off an NCAA tournament miracle before?
So that's what people think of when they think of Bryce Drew. They think of what, you know, the shot. But he's got an opportunity to make a totally different legacy. If he pulls off this win on Saturday against Iowa, the 2 seed, which will be a bigger moment in his career, his shot as a player or his win as a coach over a top 10 Iowa team?
Well, if they draw Pacer for the win again, that would be pretty epic. I don't think it's in the playbook though. Boy, hard to top the one from 98. That was weird. They won the WAC tournament on the 23rd anniversary of that shot. Like just uncanny kind of stuff. And they'd even realize it going into the day. And it would be hard to top that. Certainly in GCU history, GCU has won 3 NAIA national championships. So they do have a basketball history. It's just not very well known to most people because they're new to Division I, but they're really trying to make a splash for themselves. They've pushed hard in resources and obviously hiring quality coaches, not just Bryce Drew, but the whole staff has come from Power Fives. Ed Schilling, who's well known in that area, has been at Indiana and UCLA, and Casey Shaw came with him from Vanderbilt. And I mentioned Jamal Walker. So there's a lot of guys, and you mentioned size. It made me think of, there's some other guys too that can make them a bigger team. Oscar Freyer is a very long athletic wing at 6'7". And Sean Miller Moore comes off the bench, a transfer from Oregon State, and he's like 6'6", and he's another athletic guy. And those are the sort of guys that make them so difficult defensively.
I'm going to put you on the spot, Paul, to finish things off here. I know you're not going to pick against your team. That would almost be blasphemy, but give me a final score for Saturday night.
Oh, gosh. Well, if I'm not going to pick against the Lopes, I'm going to say like 65-64, because that's the kind of the formula that would work for GCU. Not 86, 80 doesn't sound very good for them.
So is that your head or your heart talking on that prediction?
Oh, it's certainly my heart. Yeah. I've been around these guys I'm a longtime journalist and newspaper guy, covered the NBA for a lot of years, where a lot of impartiality. But once you're part of a crew and spend every day with them and everything, you pull for them. And seeing them cut down the nets last Saturday was a pretty cool feeling, when everybody feels like a part of it, especially when we all feel like we've been building something at GCU to try to get to this stage.
Well, it's the first time any team named the Antelopes has made the NCAA tournament. There will always be that. And even if the game goes in Iowa's favor, Paul, you'll always have the weather over us here in Iowa. So,
shorts right now.
What's the temperature in Phoenix right now?
Oh, gosh. Probably a chilly like 70, something like that.
Now, what is it like in the summer? I mean, are you a southern-born guy? What's your history as far as – I know you've been all over, but
– Yeah, 70. I wasn't lying.
Yeah, we're maybe half that right now. Maybe
I'm a Phoenix born guy. I lived in Kansas City for a little while, so I can appreciate the Midwest weather and the Heartland charm. Man, did I miss seeing the sun every day in the mountains and everything like that, and the purple and orange sunsets. And we deal with some heat in the summer, but it's glorious the rest of the time, and you don't have to shovel sunshine.
You see a lot of Iowa fans around Phoenix?
Oh, yeah. I work with one. No, it's not uncommon at all for a lot of Iowa people to end up in Phoenix.
I was thinking this would be if it weren't for COVID, and you know, if this weren't a postseason game, I'd love to, if Iowa could schedule a home and home. It's just not the time in history that kind of thing just doesn't happen anymore. And I don't see Fran probably putting that on the schedule, but I'd love a home and home and travel down to Phoenix for a game and be able to witness that atmosphere you were talking about.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I have got to experience Iowa City back in the day when I was covering Arizona State. I covered a football game at Iowa. That was years and years ago, but amazing pregame atmosphere with the tailgates and everything. And I love College Town so much, and that was really cool to see. But yeah, there's a lot of Iowa fans. There's a lot of just Midwest. I hate to say it to everybody there, but there's a lot of Cyclones here. I notice a lot
really?
Of Cyclones. Yeah.
Interesting. Because we, you know, our company here, StoryCounty.News, we are in Ames. We are in Ames. And that's the concept from the Hawkeye of the Storm. That's kind of our concept. So that doesn't make me feel real great that there's a lot of red down there because we have enough of it up here. But so are you a Cardinals fan yourself?
I am. Yeah. It was kind of weird because when you grow up here, they I'm old enough that they weren't here. So I grew up a fan of other teams, but then you can't help it now with what they've built and everything. One of my best friends works for the Cardinals. And so it's pretty exciting what they built. Everything changed as soon as they built a stadium, and all of a sudden they've been an NFL power regularly since then, and an attractive destination, obviously, if you see what's happened lately with them.
Yeah. Absolutely. I'm sure the town between the Antelopes and the
JJ Watt might have got a little bit more attention.
I was going to say, yeah, that might have been dominating the headlines for a while, and rightfully so. But Paul, we really appreciate you coming on. And again, regardless of what happened Saturday, I think it's a great, just so many great storylines feeding this game. And of course, this ties for Iowa's highest seed in program history as well. So a lot of history at stake. We appreciate you joining us, and go Hawks, go Lopes.
Go both. When I was a kid, I had an Iowa Hawkeye shirt because my dad was in the Air Force, and he always had people bring me back college shirts. So I had an Iowa shirt where the Hawkeye and the words were backwards on the back, so it looked like it said AWOL.
You'll have to have that one on underneath your GCU shirt in case Iowa wins.
It doesn't fit anymore.
All right. This has been Brad's Branded Thoughts, and from the Hawkeye of the Storm, we'll talk to you later this week where we make our official game predictions for Iowa versus Grand Canyon Saturday night, 5:25 p.m. Central Time on TBS. We'll talk to you soon.